All right, guys, how's it going? This is Mushu Beef here, and we are at broadcast.gg Office Hours Podcast, joined today here by Shadosha. How's it going, man?
Oh, life is good. Life is great. The sun is out, and I get to run around the beach, damn near half naked, so that's great. Feeling good.
Where are you based out of again?
Originally from Connecticut, currently living in the Valley, but I hang out over by Hermosa Beach all the time, so I'm a beach bum now.
Nice, very cool. Yeah, it's sunny here in San Francisco as well. Actually, Chris, who was at the Omen by HP booth as well, he's crashing at my place, and he's like, dude, the weather's always nice. I was like, yeah, just moved to San Francisco.
Yeah, life is good. Things aren't as on fire for you, I'm hoping.
Yeah, just north of us. I mean, we were getting some smoke north of the city. A lot of that area was on fire, but fortunately not in the city itself.
But Lord knows. Yeah. Can't do it.
So we met at TwitchCon this past weekend, and you were doing hosting and casting for PUBG at the Omen by HP booth. Let's go all the way back. What got you into gaming and esports?
So gaming, I mean, that was just a childhood thing. I was growing up in a neighborhood where, I mean, I played outside a lot, but, you know, on the rainy days when things, you know, I come from a bad neighborhood, so when things were a little bit rough but I wanted to play, my dad didn't want me out on the street, so, you know, he had a couple of consoles. My grandfather had two arcade machines. One of them was off-road. That was the one with the three steering wheels. I think it was Super Off-Road. I don't even remember. The other one was Pac-Man, and I had a bunch of video games. When it came to competitive, that was actually by accident. I was playing my cousin in a game called Virtual Fighter because he didn't want to play me in Dead or Alive, and I didn't want to play him in Street Fighter. He beat me once. He got lucky, and then I just kept practicing and practicing, so the next time we played, we could play each other, and I ended up accidentally winning a tournament, so that happened. It was just a legit stroke of luck, so I was like, all right, well, cool.
Nice. So, I mean, just like entering for fun, and then like, oh, I guess I won? Okay.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, they said money was on the line, and I had nothing to lose. At that point, I was living in Georgia, and really, there was nobody around me that was beating me in the game that I was playing. I put in so much time and so many hours. So in that region, I did pretty good, and then I played so much online, I didn't realize that I was playing the best players on the East Coast. I was playing a lot of people from New York, and they were just ridiculous at the game. But I didn't think about that. I just thought about, I don't like losing. I don't want to lose. I want to beat these guys. So I just kept doing everything that I could to not lose. And, you know, I never realized how serious fighting games were, because that's where I came from, the fighting game community. I didn't realize how serious these fighting games were being taken. So for me to take it, like, it was a treat. It was probably one of the best feelings ever.
I think I would say people from outside fighting game community may discount it because it doesn't seem as big, but right, it's grassroots and it's everywhere, right? I just have met so many people that when I am talking about esports and whatnot, they're like, oh yeah, I'm not really into that, but I'm into like Smash, or I'm into Street Fighter, or I'm into you know, what are all the other games that are Marvel vs. Right. Capcom. And it's like, damn, there's so many people who play it. I mean, it might be bigger, we just don't have the connection, right? It's all about those local communities.
Yeah, I was going to say, if you were to make one centralized game, kind of similar to like Counter-Strike or League of Legends, like I said, that's a centralized MOBA. When people think MOBA, they think that game. Of course, there's Dota and there's, you know, other shooters respectively. But when it comes to the fighting game community, it's called the fighting game community. And there's so many games within that community, and everybody just kind of plays their own thing. So it may seem like there's small clusters, but if you put them all together, it's a huge, huge, huge thing. I mean, look at Smash community alone. I think they represent half of the FGC, in my opinion. Whether you want to call it a fighting game or not, they represent half. And then the other half is just Street Fighter, Tekken, and a whole bunch of other anime fighters all together. It's pretty big. It's pretty big.
Yeah, for sure. And so you did those tournaments, and I mean, how long were you kind of a competitor for?
I probably went from like 2008 to 2014. Again, it wasn't my intention to be a competitive player. It was just that my cousin challenged me and then ducked me for the rest of his life. I want to put that out there. He hasn't played me in a fighting game, including Street Fighter, since.
What?
But he's a punk. I'll call him out later. Shout out to my cousin. Anyway, I competed on the circuit, many circuits, and not even just in fighting games, probably since 2008. All the way up until 2014, where I moved out to California to kind of do some other things.
Cool. I mean, that's quite a long time. So that's 6 years, right? 2008 to 2014. Was there a specific moment in that you realized you liked doing casting and hosting?
Well, I did them both at the same time. So okay. That was a stroke of luck as well. So the same tournament, I should be clear. I did a tournament in New York. It was hosted by Samsung called World Cyber Games. At the time, the game that they were featuring was Dead or Alive. I played that game. Didn't do so good. So I ended up meeting another player there. His name was Swoozy. He's pretty big. He's pretty huge on YouTube now. And also one of my mentors. And he was on the microphone kind of doing his thing. He took a break and he just kind of put the mic down. And me and a friend of mine, we just picked up the microphone and just kind of started shouting stuff out and just being silly on the microphone. And it was like, oh, well, they thought it was Swoozy doing it the whole time. And then they found out it was just me doing it while he was on break. And they loved it. After that, I met a couple of guys. They had a group called NoobTube TV. I know Rivington, if anybody knows League of Legends or Golden Boy, they were for a short time a part of that as well. And we all just started hopping on camera and doing stuff. And then from there, I mean, people just kept shoving cameras in my faces and I felt more comfortable there than doing anything else. So I was like, all right, cool. I'll just stick with it.
Nice. That's cool. And I saw around that time too, because I said your YouTube channel goes back about 4 years or so, I think, when you had your first video.
The first YouTube video does. That one that you're looking at goes that far back. There's one even way further than that.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I'm not giving you that one. You can't have it. Sorry.
All right. We won't get into maybe one day. One day I'll know I'll earn your trust when you show me that when I see the video. But anyways, yeah. So then you started doing YouTube content as well, and it was pretty much like all this related, right?
Right. All of it came in together. And I should make mention, since you brought it up earlier, that all of this was around the time that I was wearing a shirt on my head. Now, that origin story, I will tell, and it's funny, but we'll get to that in a second. But yeah, all of that happened at the same time.
Okay, cool. Hey, well, one thing I definitely noticed is, as well, like from your YouTube content, you had a lot of stuff where it's like Ask Shidosha, or just like you're at conferences and these events and just like talking with people and like getting them on camera and getting them to have fun. And, you know, that's definitely the same kind of vibe that I got from when you're hosting at HP Omen. So that's why, you know, we can get that a little bit later. But I don't know if you want to get through the rest of your history, your next steps after you, you know, started getting to the hosting side and how that transition went.
All right. Yeah. So after that, I ended up being hired by a group that was making a pretty interesting platform, very similar to like MLG. It was called Beyond Gaming, where you could compete on leaderboards and ladders and win some cool prizes. I was a content creator for them, and I was also helping them with their marketing. I lucked out because through that, I ended up working with the Gears of War community on a couple of events, one of which is Hypefest Station, which was really cool because I never expected that. I really liked Gears of War, and I was a fan of that. I got to do that, and I actually got to commentate that game. It was my first time ever, and they loved it. After that, you know, I got to meet a lot of gaming celebrities and other fun stuff because I was on the microphone doing interviews, doing reviews, all for the purpose of getting attention for this website so people can seek it out and see what it was, and then actually join in on the community and win some awesome prizes. I did that for probably another 3 years, and I was also competing at the same time. So yeah, even though I'm running around and talking to people, I'm also on the circuit playing Virtual Fighter because that game was still relevant, and I'm placing pretty good. So like it funded both. And really through that, you know, fighting game community, still kind of grassroots, but getting captured because this thing called Justin TV is now becoming Twitch, and they're featuring it. Beyond Gaming is partnering with Twitch as well as Evil Geniuses and a couple of other places. And so now the shirt is tied to EG and early Twitch. I mean, it was a major time for me, and I just kind of felt like a superstar. I was so
nice,
comfortable and used to seeing people. And they were looking like, if I was there, they knew it was official. It just kind of went hand in hand, and it was great. So I stuck with it. And the more I did it, the more confident I got with it. It just kept growing.
Yeah, I mean, that's really cool. I can't think of any other, or how many people had something that, especially in esports or just gaming in general, like personalities had that as part of their stick, right? Like, I think Dyrus had like this blanket thing, like a blanket he would carry on.
Sure did. Yep, I remember the blanket.
But other than that, it's like, so that's pretty unique. And I'm sure people either recognized you or like asked you about it, like, dude, what are you wearing a t-shirt on your head for?
Right. Back then, I wouldn't tell them the truth, but I can tell it now. Back then, I had really, really nappy hair, and I just could not afford a haircut. I didn't like asking my dad for money, and he was always working. So, you know, I had a really bad haircut, and I wore that shirt on my head probably for a good 2 to 3 years in high school, to the point where I would get in trouble and have to go to the principal for having the shirt on my head. And they just said, you know, just let him have it. Fine, it's cool, whatever, doesn't matter. It's better than a hat. He has a shirt on his head. He's uncomfortable without it. Fine. And yeah, I took that through college. I was on camera with it. At that point, I had a haircut, but it was so bad. I just like, whatever. I cut my own hair and just didn't work out well. So I just threw the shirt back on my head. And yeah, it just kind of came synonymous with the personality that I brought to the public. Everyone was like, oh, it's the shirt. It's the shirt. It's the shirt. So I never really took it off. I let people kind of have fun with it. And then it was a point in time where people were like, I wonder what Shidosha looks like without the shirt on his head. You know, and then that mystique, and that made my numbers grow even more because now people are like theory crafting. What is underneath that shirt? It's insane. So it was the stupidest thing ever to me personally, because I know I had it on, but it grew such a huge fan base. I was like, I wouldn't, you know, do without it.
That's cool. That reminds me of like Dr. Disrespect when I finally saw pictures of him like from TwitchCon, not in his, in his outfit. I'm like, whoa, what?
Completely different. Handsome dude.
Yeah, he handsome is. Dude. Handsome dude. Why is he wearing a wig? He's got, you know, he's, he can slick back the hair and.
Right.
And got a good smile. Anyways, you know, from that point, getting to the products you're on now, I mean, you're doing like the work, like I mentioned, with HP Omen. Right. And you have something coming up for BlizzCon as well, right?
Yeah, a little small project. I can't speak on that yet. Okay. But yeah, I'll be on some TV screens.
Cool. Yeah, I guess like getting to. Where you're at now, it just sounds like it was a lot about their persona. People knew you, and just all this experience that you have now, people just have confidence that you're going to help be like a really good facilitator for the audience and for making the event exciting and fun to watch.
Right. I mean, it was a point in time. Again, I probably stopped doing all of this stuff for maybe a good 2 to 3 years when I moved to LA. I came out to LA to help. I wanted to, of course, grind because I want my own TV show. That is my goal and purpose being out here. But I was helping out a friend who was opening a business, and I told him, I got your back. I just need to be in LA to make some things happen. He was like, cool. So that was a good 2 to 3 years that I took off. And the beauty of it is I had built such a reputation and a resume that even though, you know, now I'm on the West Coast, not the East Coast, I have to reestablish my clientele and the people who know me. I have to show them, hey, I'm back on the map. But they gave me such a huge chance. And then they remembered why Shidosha was Shidosha. It was never the shirt on the head that made everything crazy. Yeah. It was what I did. It was the energy and my ability to improvise and just kind of create an environment where communities just want to stick around. That was the thing that made the shirt and Shidosha popular. It's just that energy really excited people and made them buy into whatever was going on.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely, and like I mentioned in the beginning, that's definitely what I saw and picked up on first. I was like, who is this guy? Like, he's so much energy. Like, I have not heard of him before. Maybe I'm just living under a rock. Maybe
I should. No, that's fine. No, I tell people, you know, you can do a damn good job casting when you can make staring at a map and watching people drop seem like the most exciting thing ever. Like, that takes skill. And if anybody thinks they could do it, please, I would love for you to be my partner in this stuff. Go ahead. Hit my line, please.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, PUBG is definitely in not esports ready yet, but and they're admitting it themselves. But I think you guys did a good job to cover for it and still made it fun. So, I mean, we keep talking about energy in your hosting and your casting. I mean, what does that mean to you and how do you feel like you utilize that?
I mean, honestly, the energy I have is just that's a me thing. That has always been just kind of the person that I am. I'm always, you know, optimistic, always looking on the bright side, always happy to see people, always just happy to be here. It doesn't really matter what the situation is. It's just, that's who I am, and that's what I like to bring to anything that I do because that energy is contagious. You got a lot of negative crap going on in the world right now. Yeah. A lot of people kind of breathe that negativity. I'm the opposite. I breathe a lot of positivity, and I have fun telling a story. And also, I have fun playing video games. So now you're telling me I can be this person and bring those two things to the table. I mean, it's for me personally, it's easy button to kind of share my excitement for a game, especially that I appreciate. And then to be able to translate the story for those people that may not be familiar with what's going on. Like, that's the reason that I keep the energy levels that I have. That way I can help tell the story and tell you, okay, this is when you need to get excited. I don't want to actually say, guys, get excited right now, but I want to kind of soft sell you that excitement. Like, this is the moment you guys should be hyped. So let me convey that kind of energy because I'm hyped for it. And then when I tone it down, this is where the tension is. This is where the pace kind of dumps down. This is where some other, you know, extracurricular decisions are being made. And then I get into analysis. So, you know, energy helps heavily with the storytelling. And if you miss it or don't know how to convey it, you'll really kind of give either a bland or overdramatic kind of experience to the audience. And you never want to do that.
Gotcha. Yeah. And do you feel like you're ever at a point where maybe for certain events or the way you say, like you do an intro and you're like, oh man, that was that too much? Or was that not enough? How do you feel like it's finding that perfect energy?
Sometimes. So I never really worry about the energy. More so because I'm always aware of my audience. That's one thing that I pay attention to. I look at who's in the crowd. Like, you guys are part of the show, and say I wanted to sit down next to any random person and just have a conversation with them on what's going on. I need to be able to communicate with them, no matter what their skin color is, age range, gender, whatever. I need to be able to sit next to them and speak in a manner which translates to who and how they are. So, like, that's important to me, first and foremost. After that, I just make sure that I'm not fumbling on my words. Like, I think more so I struggle with sometimes I'm so energetic and I'm so hyped that I might be going too fast, or I just might not have all my thoughts gathered together and I might be just mentally stuck for a moment. And then I just kind of need to gain my composure. It happens to the best of us. And for there, you need some gamer sups or, you know, one of them energy drinks, but, you know, you get it together.
Yeah. Yeah. Like you mentioned, like, paying attention to the audience is an important thing. Can you expand on that a little bit more? So, like, what are the signals you're looking for and that you want to see as you're, like, bringing people along on the story, on this ride with you?
Well, there's two groups of people that I identify when I go to anything. And I keep it this general just because it just helps me kind of focus on the style of commentary I need to do. Because remember, the point of a commentator is to tell a story. That's what they're there for. To tell a story and to translate what's happening to the general audience. So I have the people that know the game and the people that don't know the game. Literally, that's it. The people that know the game, those are the ones that, for the most part, you really don't need to say or do anything. So your commentary, while it does kind of add to the story, there's a level of advancement that you can have with your style of commentary. A good example would be like in Tekken and then the notations that they use in order to explain what's going on a screen. Like, you'll hear somebody, one popular character right now is Jack. A lot of people talk about Jack, and I myself am a Jack player. So when somebody says like something like down back one, okay, if you're a general person, you don't know what the heck I just said, right? But if I said he's coming in, he's going for this low attack, this quick low attack. Well, okay, when they see the low attack and then I correlate down back one to it, now people understand, oh, that's what this is. And that's what I mean by kind of bridging the gap from the general audience and getting them on board with what's going on and appealing to the diehard fans that are fans of the game and already know what's going on and appreciate the play-by-play. When you do both of those things, you make the newcomers feel welcome because they're not lost in the sauce. They don't feel like, okay, I have to know this game in order to understand it and watch it. And then the newcomers are just like, well, he's just forwarding the story, and this is really cool, and this guy knows his stuff. You know what I mean? So being able to not just sift out who's who, but being able to bridge that gap in your commentary, I think that is the biggest thing.
Yeah. And I notice a lot, too, especially in FGC commentary, that it's not like you're not telling everything that's happening on the screen, right? It's a lot more... Yeah, or it's just different. I don't even know actually how to describe it.
No, you said it correctly. I mean, I did make this point a moment ago, but I'll make it right now. When you do that, when you start talking about everything that's happening on the screen, what you end up doing is disconnecting from the diehard audience. All the new people that are listening to it, they are understanding what's going on, but you're kind of holding their hand, right? Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, that's sort of fine, but this isn't like a beginner's exhibition. This isn't a showcase to show off a new game. This is a tournament, right? Like, for example, you're not seeing that in basketball at all. And nor are you really hearing about like a lot of the plays that they're using, the formations that they use. It, like, all of that stuff can get lost in translation as well. So what you want to do is you want to find a happy medium, something that can be consumed by the general audience and something technical enough that keeps the hardcore players kind of attentive to what you have to say.
Yeah, no, I think that's really great advice, because at the end of the day, you have to be listening to or aware of what your audience can understand and crafting the story for them so they get the story, and that's the goal. I mean, you already said it, point of a commentator is to tell a story,
right?
And if they don't get the story you're telling, or they're now like, okay, I'm tuning out because I don't want to listen to them, then you're pretty much like, you're useless at that point.
Yeah. You'll definitely lose your hardcore audience. and if you do too much babbling about the bread and butter of the game, and you're definitely going to lose the general audience who you really want to pay attention to, because those are the new guys that are coming in and added to the numbers, if you just talk all this technical mumbo jumbo.
Nice. So for you, in kind of finding that balance as well, was it you getting feedback from other people, or are you just having a sense for it based on Twitch chat?
A little bit of both. So when I played Virtual Fight, I found myself getting a little bit too in-depth, because again, I played that game hardcore, right? That was my game. And as you know, I kind of got away with it because Virtual Fighter has a really close-knit niche community who they understand the game and they appreciate that technical jargon simply because Virtual Fighter is such a deep game. But now you've got me on stage with a Sega representative, right? Doing a show, an exhibition, mind you, to show off Virtual Fighter 5 Final Showdown. This was back in, I think, 2013 I did this. Mm-hmm. And these guys have never heard of the game. Now I can't speak the same kind of technical jargon with them. They're not going to get it. They're not going to understand it. And the depth of the game, for the most part, is something that people find scary. So from there, I told myself, shoot, I really want new people to come and play this game, but I can't speak like this. I've got to find a way to, you know, not just explain the game, but I have to, you know, find a way to make comparisons to maybe other fighting games that might seem like they're much more ease of access, and then translate how that knowledge can come to here and why it's fun. Like, it's a different beast, but you know, with a little bit of practice and understanding of what you need to do as a storyteller, like, it's not too bad.
Yeah, I guess it's just like the iteration and figuring out what is the right thing to say in that moment and what will the audience get. Yeah, I'm trying to think about like a general, I don't know if it's possible to even generalize it, but as you're talking about it, made me think that the way you're talking with the audience is almost like if you're discussing with your friend who's also plays the game.
Right. Like what, so I always imagine it like this. I'm sitting next to two people. Mm-hmm. I'm legit sitting next to my homeboy who plays the game and sees the stuff but might be looking at their phone for a minute. So now I need to catch him up on the action, right? And then I'm sitting also on my right side. I'm sitting next to a person who found my hype interesting for some reason and wants to know why I'm getting excited for a scenario. So I need to break it down for them. Now, I don't feel like explaining the same thing twice. So I got to break it down in a way so both of them get it. And then I can just continue to get hype. Like, that's exactly how I approach it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And then what makes it cool is that, again, I said I'm sitting next to two people that are interested in what I have to say. These guys want to have this conversation with me. And there's that engagement that I was talking about. Like, they want to have this conversation with me.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. And that's pretty true, right? It's not like that you're even faking what, like trying to put yourself in a situation that is not real. Like that is a realistic, right. That's realistically what's happening in the audience. You have these people who are, you know, there who get the game, but then also people who are trying to figure out what's going on too.
Right.
Cool. Yeah. No, I mean, I think that's a pretty good summary of what, in terms of like communicating your story, right? And, mm-hmm. and how you approach the analysis and whatnot. Like I saw some pretty cool like interaction between like you and Joshi as well.
Right.
That you ended up being a little bit more analytical to Joshi. And so I don't know if like as you're working with different casters and whatnot, like I saw that like out of Joshi, like he's probably like not the most hype person. And not like in a bad way, but like he'll be more pretty neutral, like not like low energy, but not like super high. But like right. Together with you, it felt like a really good complement to pairing. So like as you're working with different people, do you find that you're maybe even on the experience with Joshi, if you want to expand on a little bit more, or just on like on interactions when you're working with other casters?
Sometimes I have a hard time, but the only time I ever have a hard time with casters are the ones that don't understand the concept of having a conversation. I've done commentary with people who cut me off, or who I might say something and then feed it to them and then they say the exact same thing. There's a disconnect there when that happens. That means that they're not listening, nor are they really paying attention to how we're trying to structure the show. And that can be painful because, again, you know, if you have a co-caster that's like that, it creates a level of disconnect. Oftentimes, like I can play both sides. So for those people that may not know, that usually when people hire casters or co-hosts or whatever, they always seem to look for an analyst and a color commentator, if you ever notice. I've always prided myself in being both. I'm good at both. And that way, you know, worst case scenario, say I'm paired with somebody that, you know, doesn't know PUBG, right? Knows enough general stuff about casting and about shooting games to talk about action that takes place on the field, but doesn't actually know the game. Well, you know, I know the game. And if they can at least communicate what's going on, they can do color. That's easy color. They can just talk about the action that's taking place. And as that's going on, if their storytelling ability is there, and I should say more so their conversation ability is there, we can discuss what's going on while the map is open and people are dropping, how people are going to play a certain circle, what positions are available on the map based on, you know, where people are, where the zone is going to go and all that other stuff. Like, I can break that stuff down and analyze it and make it feel organic, so long as they can feed off of that and continue to ask more questions, which is, you know, fortunately something that Joshy did, because I know he said he was fairly new to PUBG himself. And me, I play a lot of battle royales, and PUBG is the one that I started on the most, so I have a lot of insight to. And in that position, I had to dial back. I was like, okay, I can be the color commentator, but right now what we need is some solid analysis to kind of bring everything home. I'm going to take the back seat. I'm going to analyze, and I'm going to let him call the action. And then I'll just let the crowd know when, hey, this is a hype moment. I need that energy up, or this is a tense moment. I need us to just, you know, kind of, you know, tense up and just get ready for what's about to go down.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely what I saw as well. It's like, in terms of leading the energy, it was kind of like you were leading from, you weren't like pulling people along, right? Actually, right. I don't know what the right analogy is here. Is pushing better than pulling people? I don't know. But but it was like,
either way, I'm leading them along. Yeah, I'm leading them to the promised land, pretty much. Yeah.
And it was like we were following you, right? In your energy, right. And it wasn't just like, oh my god, big play. But it was like the build up. Like we're feeling like, oh man, like they're in their house next to each other. They definitely heard each other, and you know, building up to that, I think that was definitely what made it a lot of fun.
Yeah, it just adds more depth to a game. Any game that you play, I feel like, needs to have that sort of tension. I think Counter-Strike has the best burst moments of that. Second would probably be these battle royale games, specifically PUBG. Counter-Strike has a lot of moments where people are scouting zones. They're checking positions, seeing who's where, trying to see if anyone's peeking, looking for that initial frag, and then trying to make a rush or a counter play or something like that. From there, and I learned a lot of this stuff from watching, you know, people like Lauren and then Richard, who actually did casting for ESL, and they did PUBG as well. They knew when to point out when something was going on, like, okay, these are the positions in which they're looting, and this is what could take place. Those are all things that you have to consider, and letting the crowd know that these are things that they can consider, and then doing the buildup when it's about to happen. And for us, it's our duty to know when that stuff is about to happen or how it can play. And that's why analysis is important. To be able to kind of show that stuff off, that's another big bulk of the storytelling. And that's just kind of what helps lead the energy along and gets people engaged and hyped, even if they don't know what's going on, even if they just tuned in and just started watching from the middle of the game.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And so you started talking about like it's your duty as a caster to know what is what are the hype moments. Some of the discussions we've had with some of the other casters as well has been that you need to almost be able to tell the future.
Yes. Right? Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes. And people call me a psychic all the time.
Yeah, it's like, but it's because of your game knowledge. It's because you see the patterns, like you're, so yeah, I don't know if you want to, how do you feel about that? Like, you said someone even called you a fortune teller. Point.
Yeah, when I did Virtual Fighter specifically, I can tell people a sequence in a situation that was going to take place, and it seemed like I guessed right all the time, and people are not understanding. How do you do that? Like, you told, like, the round hasn't started and you already guessed how it was going to play out. Is this rigged? And it's like, no. Look at the person's play style. Look at the situations they always go for, and look at how the other person reacts to that. If they don't have the reactions to deal with it, it's always going to play out the same way. With something like PUBG, there's a big RNG factor. There's a couple things that go into play that randomize it, but there's still a general structure. So the things that are random are, where's the plane going to go when it first starts, right? Where are you going to jump? I mean, that actually, I can't call that random, because that's a choice that you have to make. Where you jump is your choice. Where the plane goes, not your choice. Where the initial starting zone goes. That is out of your control. Oh, yeah. And then what loot is on the ground is also not in your control. From there, after all of those things have generated, then the game starts. And at that point, you have a formula to work with, and you can tell people how things are going to play out. So people that know the game well enough to know that the bridges north of the sunken city or the ruins are the easiest to guard if you're on the north side because you have the hillside to cover you and all that other stuff. Like, you know who's going to be in position because they know that stuff. And you know how everybody else trying to get across the field is going to play it as well, because that's a general formula. And you start to see the people who are trying to push to the north side of the bridge start to fall. You start to see people finding rotations around that stuff because they know that there's going to be people at that top side that are going to try to lock them up. And there's a tree line to the east that they can use. Like, you know, general things like that. If you know those things, and that's what I mean by you have to know the game, then it does make you seem like a fortune teller. Because literally, these guys are playing the most people's play styles in any game don't really change. I mean, there's some evolution there, but it usually comes after losing a lot and you get tired of losing.
Yeah, yeah. What's not broke, don't fix it, right?
Right, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I even just learned some stuff just now. I mean, just about PUBG specifically, I wasn't expecting to. I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that, I remember that bridge north of Sunken City. Oh, yeah, there are hills up there. I'm like, wow.
Yeah, and it's a huge choke point. When people get that zone, people like to play that way. Same with the bridges. I mean, everybody kind of knows the generic bridges going over by the military base and how plays out. They know how many boats are there. They know how the wraparound works. Like, everybody knows that. But then there's like, again, there's like mid-range places. It's that farmland meta and all this other stuff that happens. And for the most part, specifically because this is a young game, everybody plays it the same way. Now, when you get into something as deep as Virtua Fighter, that game is heavily based on getting to know other people. Another reason why I'm strong with my commentary is because Virtua Fighter is like doing commentary on a controller. You have to get to know your audience and play based on them. And that helps you decide what tools you can use, what situations you can set up, and what's going to happen next, depending on that. And then you control those options. If you know those things and you're casting them, it's always going to make you look like a psychic. Because you literally can option select what's about to happen, and then it makes it sound like you're right all the time. Like, that's all I'm doing.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I think we even chatted too. There's something that I was super impressed by, is your game knowledge and across all these different titles that you're doing. How do you learn so much about the game?
I'm a nerd, man. I have the time. Listen, you don't have to pay me to play any of these video games. I do it by myself. I just like the checks because it makes me look better when I'm doing it. You know what I'm saying? Either way, I'm going to take the time, because I enjoy everything, to read a story, or in this case, the play and learn a game. I remember when I was approached to do Critical Ops, and that was, you know, that's a mobile shooter. It's very similar to Counter-Strike. No one was expecting me to actually get to know the game and get to know the meta and understand how this thing works. But I knew that was one of the things that would make the community not only appreciate their game, but feel like it was being taken seriously. So for that sake, I'll always put time away for any game, especially if I'm casting it, and actually enjoy it, to do that and make sure it's represented properly. Because those are the things that'll help other people who may not know the game or may not understand why it's interesting want to actually pick the game up and play it. So yeah, no, I dedicate a lot of time to multiple games. And again, I'm not playing to get to the level where I'm a professional, although I could. And I usually just do that for exhibitions, just in case one of these pro players, you know, start talking slick and need to get slapped. You know, I got to be at least good enough to slap them a couple of times and let them know, hey, look, all right. But for the most part, I try to play enough of it so that I understand the general meta and the choices that they can make in, you know, any given scenario. And then from there, I just kind of spend time with the players and get to understand them.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's really clear that even though I put in like 200 and whatever hours of PUBG, like, you know, still learn some things about map rotations and whatnot from, you know, between your cast and especially watching like Lauren and Richard, Pansy and Sims, if people don't know them by their actual names. And so it just sounds like once you're in that mindset of that allowed you to already be a good commentator. Like, when you're playing the game, you can't help but be thinking about those things.
Right. And then it makes you a better player by default because you know kind of these things and you try to exercise them just based off of what you call common sense or common logic. And then believe it or not, now you're playing at an intermediate to a high level and it just makes your gameplay and your casting that much better.
It's like definitely important to, if you can, like be thinking about the game in that way, or like if you're already naturally inclined to do that, then that could be something that makes someone a good caster. And so that's pretty cool to hear. Yeah, I guess are there any other topics you feel like you wanna talk about? I mean, I think we got some good stuff already, but open it up.
I think if there's one thing I want to touch bases on, and I guess I'm giving a shout out to Joshy for being so good at this, is being able to bounce off of the person you're casting with, because that is a big deal. I urge people to learn how to do color and analysis, specifically because you never know who's going to be sitting next to you. And you never know exactly how they're going to play off of what you know and vice versa, how you're going to play off what they know. It helps to not only enhance the experience of the game, but the story itself. If you're sitting next to a person that doesn't just have experience, because Joshy has 8 years of experience doing commentary. I do too. He and I have never commentated before until that day. But he knew enough to understand how to pitch for analysis and pitch for a story and ask for information where he felt like he didn't have it. If you're a young caster learning a new game, or you just know the bare bones of a game, I advise you guys to do what Joshy did and ask those questions. And also just get to know your co-casters and how they function. That way you can tell that much stronger of a story. I think that's that's something that people don't do. And oftentimes when I see events and I see commentary, it feels really disconnected, or it just feels like these guys are talking at each other and just speaking and doing a job and not really creating an experience on top of the game that other people could enjoy. So with that said, I watch a lot of commentary on mute, or a lot of games on mute, and I should never have to hit my mute button when you're getting ready to talk. So hopefully these guys can learn something from that and get to know the people sitting next to them as well as the game, because that's so important.
Yeah, I mean, it in the conversation, I think, just helps it be kind of this coherent, I don't use the word conversation, but that's basically what it is and why it's so valuable, right? It's because you see this exchange of information, and there's so much more that you can gain from it when it is a conversation as opposed to one person just talking to you, right? Because it shows the different sides and perspectives.
Yeah, it just makes it seem more organic. It makes it actually seem like a true experience instead of this kind of professional. Because I've had a couple people tell me when I'm not doing commentary somewhere, it felt bland, it felt boring, it just felt like a production. It didn't feel like an actual experience. And I'm like, well, that's a shame, because what I do isn't even super special in my opinion. I think what I do is legitimate. It's just the protocol. It's what it should be anyway. Commentators need to have some kind of relationship built, or at least the ability to establish a relationship, even if you've never casted with somebody before. Because as I said before, now I've known Joshy for years, but again, I have never casted with him. Yet he made my job so much easier when I got to the floor, because he took the time to communicate with me. Whereas I've casted with other people that I've known for that same amount of time, but when we're on the table and I'm trying to play off of them, like the transitions work well and they get to do their stuff, but they don't throw it back the same way, or they're not paying attention and they repeat something that I say and then it just looks or sounds off.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so you mentioned like specifically, not obviously not cutting you off is great. The handoffs back to you were great, and like it was clear that when his responses, he was listening to what you're saying. Go ahead, yeah.
I was gonna say there were some scenarios in which he was unsure of what was going on in certain situations. Like, okay, why is this? And it was the way he structured it. And what I love about this is that he reached for the question, or he asked the question, without breaking the pace of the storytelling or the game. And that's huge. That's another thing. Okay, so saying, oh, if you don't know the game, I'm discrediting you. Sometimes you can't say that. Sometimes it's best, and it's really strong of a host or a caster to be able to ask those questions. That's a skill. whether people realize that or not, to be able to ask those questions and fish for information and not break the stride of the game and still, you know, like, you know, still keep the pace going, that's something really difficult to do. So, you know, much credit to Joshy, where when he didn't know something, he fished for that information, he got it, he remembered it, and he kept casting as if nothing ever happened. I love it.
Nice. You have to, definitely going to try to get Joshy on. Maybe we can interrogate him about that. I'll ask questions without breaking the flow. It'll be a little meta, right? Asking him questions and how he's asking questions.
Right, it's a part of improv. He does a great job. Does a great job.
Yeah. I'm hearing you saying analyst in color. What would you call the different roles like in fighting game community, typical casting?
Same thing, analyst in color. It's just the pace of it is a lot different. If you compare it to, again, Counter-Strike, there's a lot of downtime in between. PUBG, the whole, I think you have a good 10 to 15 minutes. And I'm talking about in a regular game, not the Omen Challenge, where the, you know, the zone moves a bit faster. You have a good 10 to 15 minutes of downtime to just analyze, right? And then when the action kicks off, that's where the color gets to do their thing. They get to just get high, they get to talk about what's going on, they get to call the play-by-play. Like, that's what color does.
Yeah.
And in fighting games, you know, maybe you have a good 3 to 4 seconds of footsie's time to talk about the meta, or how this certain matchup is playing or what they're doing within their range. That's the analysis part. And then when hits start to land or combos start to land, you have time to quickly get to the color and then time in between when they get knocked down and they're going for the next setup to talk about the analyze, okay, their options on wake up and things of that nature. It's very short compared to shooters.
Yeah, that makes sense. The reason why I was asking was because I think for Overwatch and League, the roles, they tend to call them color and then play-by-play. Mm-hmm. So like the color is the analyst in that world, and then the play by play is the person who's talking through the action. So it's just cool to hear like different terminology, I guess, based on the different game.
I actually did not know that, and you taught me something new today. So thanks for that trade. That's cool. Interesting though. I mean, either way, I still say both need to be able to do something. Because if you have a scenario specifically like PUBG, where there's again 10 minutes. Of nothing really going on, people looting, people trying to find where the zone is going to begin, people trying to find vehicles. That's not real action. Like, that's action, but that's the setup for the game. Yep. Like, you're still, in my opinion, on the character select screen if you were going to compare it to a fighting game. You're still picking your champions if you're going to compare it to League of Legends in that scenario. Like, you're still doing that in that time. So you have to kind of treat it, I guess the best correlation I can make is you have to treat it like the band phase or the character select screen. Like, that's what you have to do in that 10 to 15 minutes as they're getting their loot and doing all that stuff.
Yeah, that's really true. That's actually a really good point. Might even like put a word to it, almost like the hand, right? Playing a card game. As the hand is coming into existence, right? That looks like a bunch of different things across different esports. And they happen at different stages, and you have different amounts of time to talk to them, to talk about that.
Right.
Cool. Yeah, I think we'll have to invent a term for that, maybe. Because that's part of what this part of this project is too, right? Like, it's seeing the parallels across all these different esports. Because at the end of the day, we're all here to tell a story about gaming.
Absolutely,
it's something that we do it because we love telling the story, and we're all storytellers. And that's what we've been saying over and over again in this chat and all the other talks that we've had with people. All the conversations, but they all look a little bit differently. The words are a little bit different. Color versus color and play-by-play, or is it color and analyst? What about in the beginning when they're doing this, when they're dealing their hand? I don't know. We'll go with that for now. So when the game's starting out with that pick or ban phase, you can't just have like only one person talking. It's like, oh no, that's your role. You're going to do that. Like, that's not what it's about. It's like the roles and what I've seen is more about that you're establishing those, an understanding for what you trust the other person to do.
Right.
And sounds like that's what you're doing and creating, like, work around different casting pairs for understanding what can you do, what are your strengths, and what are the strengths of your co-caster.
Absolutely. And in that scenario, especially when I was speaking to Josh, I was telling him the best things to discuss in this scenario. Mm. And again, it's going to be like a pre-analysis breakdown. And you got to treat it that way, but it's just the best way to do it. Again, similar to the band face is, all right, planes flying in, you know, the east to west. All right, what major places are in play? What will people more than likely die for? What can be the potential hotspots? Let me be specific.
Yeah.
And then, all right, who's in the best position to get to the zone, depending on if it goes here, here, or here, right? And lastly, what's the loot look like in some of these zones? There's RNG to the loot, but there are a lot of places where you're definitely going to find some insane things, but you're going to have to survive with it to make it out. For example, we always talk about the military base. Military base has probably the best loot in the game. Everybody knows that. But it's also the hardest to maneuver because a lot of people know that and they land there. Fights break out all the time. And also, God forbid, you have to go north. You have two bridges to cross.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? So now you have to deal with that meta of, okay, how do I make it across? Who's going to be positioned where? Bridge campers, underpass campers, what's going to go on? How are we going to do this? And, you know, those are things to know. But again, I feel like anybody who does analysis, it's their duty to kind of control or dictate that kind of discussion and explain what can happen and what scenarios are at play in the beginning of the game to the color commentator. That way they can call where people are landing and how it might play out. You know, they can reiterate that for you.
Yeah, and that's where all the, if you do have the game knowledge and you can know what to point towards as those things to watch for.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah. I personally prefer crates, Novo or Georgia Pole. No preference over either, as long as the plane's flying near it. But yeah, I feel like military based loot's gone down a little bit. I don't know.
I think there's been a phase of just everyone drops there. I think Georgia Pole, especially apartment side, the north side of Georgia Pole, I think is kind of not very appreciated. Crate side, everybody's, I'm glad crate side stayed the same way.
Yeah.
Nova kind of the same way. I think Nova's been a better spot that people land as well. But
yeah, I love Nova.
Again, those are spots that people tend to kind of push for now. And that's a good thing. And again, you want to kind of call to that when I call those the hot spots. Those, in my opinion, are the hot spots. So when they're in play, I want to call to that. Like, listen, there's some really good guns here. This is a hot spot. Expect a fight here, or expect whoever's staying here to long play the zone. That way they can come in with all of these super weapons and his armor and his level 3 everything, and then just kind of go to town.
Yeah, that's I think that's really great. We got a ton of really good stuff here. So, but yeah, Shidosa, anything else you wanted to kind of highlight to let, especially even some new folks who are getting into casting. I don't know if you have any advice or something like that.
The best advice I have are two things. Number one, if you want to take this seriously, just sit next to two people, that one of which might know the game, one of which might not, and just try to have a conversation about what's going on screen with them first. Mm-hmm. After that, literally, that's all you're doing. So if you're comfortable doing that, you probably have a shot at this. From there, there's a little bit more, but that's your starting point. Just be able to share the story with people you appreciate. And then from there, and the sky's the limit. After that, just keep practicing. And honestly, you can tell a great story yourself.
Cool. I like that. I really like that as something to optimize for, right? Like, that should be your main goal. Because that's something that I think you may not hear from other folks, or it's not obvious when you're watching. What you hear is the rap god play-by-play. You hear the hype. You hear the game knowledge, but what you don't necessarily hear is the conversation of what made that all so fun to listen to.
I think that gets lost in the sauce all the time.
Yeah.
And part of it is because not enough people are enjoying the story time. The ones that do are the ones that are always duoing together. And truthfully, because I bounce around so many games, I don't get that luxury. Mm. So I have to make every episode count. Everything that I do, it has to count.
Awesome. Well, that definitely, that makes so much sense. And explains why Winjard, you're casting and hosting. I was going to say performance, but don't know if that's like weird.
No, that's still right. No, you call it the same thing. Yeah, it's a performance. You know, it's a show. It's a show. Yeah. It's lights, camera, action. You know how it goes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Awesome. Where should people find you on social media?
Oh, most of my stuff is the same. Twitter and Twitch. They're both Shidosha. My Instagram is I am Shidosha. I like to drive a lot of luxury cars and then get rejected by pretty girls. It's something fun to do. I lie about the rejection part. That doesn't happen often. But
yeah, I was going
to
say.
No, I go out there. No, okay. Another thing I should probably make mention to, another reason why I got really good at casting and commentary is because it's the ability to sell something. And I learned that by speaking and dating pretty women. And sometimes you got to go through a lot of rejection. So if you deal with rejection on that side, trust me, you can do anything in the world. All right. And I've gotten good at not getting rejected. I'm just saying. So
there you go.
No, that helps out a lot. But no, jokes aside. Yeah. Instagram, I am Shidosha. I post there a lot. And also Twitter and Twitch, just Shidosha. Those are the best places to find me.
Awesome. Sounds like we need to do a follow up bonus podcast. How to be Shidosha.
You know, that's a long awaited story, and a lot of people requested it. I'll be glad to give that to you. I would. You can have that.
Okay. Well, let's see what we can do.
All right.
But awesome. Anything you want to plug, upcoming stuff or future projects?
I have a little project going on with the lovely Miss Meg Turney. If you are on Twitter and see us playing Mario Run, you can feel free to join us. We're just getting some high scores and tormenting each other. This is something that we do every once in a while because she just likes trying to beat me in games. She doesn't succeed. Bless her heart. I love her to death. Doesn't work. Sorry, boo. Can't beat me. And also, I have the Game Chat podcast every week. YouTube.com/ It's Mikey Gaming is where to find that. Every week, every Friday, drop a new episode. We just dropped episode 6. So that's after a 2-year hiatus. We got up to, I think, 175 episodes before I had to move. So yeah, this isn't a new thing. This is just like a rehash, a reboot, and I have a better mic now, so I don't sound like a potato.
There you go. Awesome. Sounds good. New numbers, I guess. New start. Definitely not a newbie, for sure.
Right.
Thanks so much for joining. So all those links and everything you said, I'll go and find the links, and we'll put it in the show notes on SoundCloud as well.
Gotcha.
Very cool. Thanks so much. Thanks again for sharing all the knowledge. Looking forward to, again, like getting all written up and sharing that. You know, I love the takeaways and again, love the energy that you always bring.
I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. I'm always happy to be here, man. I'm always happy to be here.
Awesome. Great to hear. All right, guys. Well, it's been another broadcast.gg office hours podcast, learning a bunch from Shidosha. But thanks again for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Thanks so much for listening to Broadcast.gg Office Hours. If you liked what you heard, check out our other content on Broadcast.gg and join our Discord with a link at the top of the page. We're a community of esports broadcasters improving by sharing our best practices, whether it be in shoutcasting, hosting, producing, observing, running tournaments, or anything that goes into making an esports broadcast happen. The music is by Glitch City. The link is in the description or search Glitch X City in your search engine. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.